Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.
This is Sound and Vision from KEXP. I'm Emily Fox. When Shamir was a teenager, they dropped their first single called On the Regular, and it blew up.
Yep, you know that I go. This is me on the regular, so you know. This is me on the regular, so you know.
Shamir then went on to release 9 albums by the time they're 28 years old, each one sounding very different from the last. The latest one was released on August 18th. This latest is called Homo Anxietatum, which translates to anxious man. Shamir has struggled with anxiety and other mental health issues. In a recent conversation, Shamir shared their mental health journey with me and how their different mental states have resulted in very different musical sounds. So you've been pretty open about dealing with burnout, the music industry, mental health issues. Can you talk about how you would describe your mental health issues when you first entered the music scene, you know, back in 2014, compared to how they play out and how you manage things now?
Well, first of all, I was 19. So
yeah, you were 19. Brain, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I mean, my brain is fully developed now. We can start there.
Yeah.
I think just maturity, you know, back then I was undiagnosed too. And I think even just like later on, you know, being diagnosed bipolar and like having a greater understanding of how my brain worked, I think was just the first step. I think there's, you know, they always say there's power in diagnosis, and that's so true because then you know like where to go from and how to work around it. And I just always now just, you know, give myself a temperature check and know the little mechanisms and self-care things that work for me, and also knowing my limits as well.
I'm thinking about just not having a diagnosis before, and like, yeah, the light that goes off when you finally have a diagnosis, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so helpful to know. But like, yeah. What was the turning point for you to get that diagnosis, and what did that feel like before and then after?
Well, I had a manic episode that turned into a full-blown psychotic episode. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, when I was 21, I believe.
Was that
yeah,
like
21 or 22?
In the throes of like kind of rising in the music scene at the same time? Like, were there things yeah. that were kind of triggering it to come out more?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Many things. Well, that, you know, that's kind of like the lore around my album Hope, that I was in the midst of that first, like, really bad episode when I was making that record. And then basically after, you know, making that record over a manic weekend, literally not sleeping, and then throwing it on SoundCloud the following Monday.
Wow.
Yeah, my mental health just got progressively more worse until I had a full-blown psychotic episode and spent about a week in hospital. And that's where I got my diagnosis.
Wow. And now, no, like, having that diagnosis, like, what do you do for yourself, like, to manage that, especially, like, when it comes to, like, the ups and downs of touring? Like, for anyone that has bipolar or not, that in itself, I feel like, is such an emotional toll of, like, being on tour, having this high of being on stage, then having all this downtime, being away from, like, your routine, then coming back to your routine of home. Like, that for anyone can be an emotional roller coaster. So I'm curious how you are able to manage that.
Well, tour is hard and it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't tour as much as most of my contemporaries. You know, a lot of my contemporaries are only home a month, maybe even 2 months out of the year. I don't tour that much. I just simply don't. And I generally, between like major tour years, like I did like 3 tours last year that equated to like maybe 2.5 months that I had spread over the full year. And then I didn't play for the first 6 months of this year. I don't overwork myself. Like, and I don't think it's that serious. Like, I think a lot of people think if you're not touring that much, people forget about you or like whatever. And I think I'm able to combat that by having a higher recording output. And I think that's another one of the reasons why I have a higher recording output, because I'm not touring as much.
Interesting. But I feel like, and I don't know what the economics of this are, but I mean, so many people also feel like they need to tour in order, because that's like where the money mm-hmm. is. But also mm-hmm. some people say touring, you don't make money. So
yeah, I think there's just like, there's some artists that gross on tour. And there's some artists that don't, and I'm just an artist that just don't anyway. So I just really
don't care. So what's the point? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So you signed to XL Recordings early in your career, and you know that label's put out, you know, albums by Adele, Radiohead's Tom York, Jungle, and many more. And you parted ways early on. Why do you think that deal ultimately didn't work out?
It's funny, me and XL had a very sobering conversation back in 2020 at the beginning of a lockdown in the summer. And it was really our first time where we really got to like talk. I mean, essentially I was dropped. So it's not like, I think a lot of people think that like I left. That's first of all, not how contracts work. Yeah, artists can't just be like, bye. I was dropped. And I think it was two reasons. I think on their end, one of the reasons too, and I think this is definitely a cautionary tale for other artists, is, you know, they have problems with my management, and I had problems with my management at the time too. So I super understood. And I think the other thing too is just like, you know, I think that they thought that they signed a specific type of artist that I literally wasn't. And I think that's understandable. You know what I mean? I think, I was so young back then. I was really 19. I was just trying not to let a bunch of people down around me that were older than me and that was like exploiting me and just didn't know how or want to like put my foot down as an artist. And I think had I done that more, or had I known how to do that, there wouldn't kind of like be this like kind of like misconstruement about what type of artist I was.
Mm-hmm. Because what's interesting is like we think about your first album that you dropped, you know, Ratchet, like it's very kind of like poppy, dancey.
Yes, yes, I'm the best. What you heard? Anything less is
obviously absurd.
Haters get the bird, more like an eagle. This is my movie, stay tuned for the sequel. Seems so wrong, seems so illegal. Got this in the back like a foul ball free throw. Yep, yep, you know that I go. This is me on the regular, so you know. This is me on the regular, so you know.
And then your mm-hmm. other albums that followed were all very, very different. How would you describe the sonic shift in each of those records following Ratchet?
I would describe all those post records as just guitar based, but also each record is realistically a different genre.
Yeah. Like, how would you describe each genre? Like if you were to go through that discography?
Okay. This is fun to me. So, okay. So Hope is technically the second album, but unofficially because, you know, it was just thrown on SoundCloud. But like now that I signed to Kill Rock Stars, they licensed it and repressed it for vinyl. And I would definitely call that my outsider music album. It's very just like outsider. I called it outsider pop, which is, I know, oxymoron, but... but it has like very like outsider music vibes to me. And then Revelations is just my straight up lo-fi rock. And then Resolution, I would say, is my grunge record. BD, Here Comes the Ha is my cowboy meets post-punk record. Cataclysm is definitely my doom metal record. And then Self-Titled is my indie pop record. And then Heterosexuality is an industrial record. You're just stuck in the box that was made for me. And then I think this record, Homo Exiatatum, is kind of just like getting back to indie pop, but with a like a clear, you know, 90s Lilith Fair acoustic pop flair to it.
I love it. You described it way better than I ever could.
Well, I made the records.
Right. Do you think like this will be the trend moving forward in your music to always be shifting, or do you think you've landed on something?
I think that's just natural. No, I think that's just naturally how I am as an artist. Even if I wanted to just do one thing, I don't think I can. Like, I think this is, I think people think that I do this on purpose. I don't. I'm just, that's just how my personality is. Like, my hair is different every month. Like, I'm just that type of person. I'm always like constantly like reinventing myself because I get bored easily. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. The songs on your latest record, what songs are you particularly proud of and why?
Without You, that one definitely is just another one I'm proud of. I love being able to just write about serious topics, but like not in like a boring or preachy way. I think it's still a fun song. I think this is kind of like the first song that I have that's like very just straightforward about climate change, and like that's what that song is about. And it was a song that was heavily inspired by Sinead O'Connor.
So
that, you know, the recent news is really hard for me. I mean, even at the end of that song, I don't know if you noticed, but I do like a very like kind of like Sinead O'Connor-esque yodel at the end. Mm-hmm. And that was like very much on purpose. So, yeah.
When you were channeling Sinead O'Connor in this song, like, what about Sinead's work or just as a person, like, what about her inspires you?
Well, her music always, her music and voice have always just, like, inspired me to begin with. And I always loved how outspoken she was. But she always had a really, really close place in my heart because I would never forget kind of, like, this moment. It was like really sad and really triggering for me, but it also just like made me feel really blessed about what I did have. Because after my bipolar diagnosis in 2017, after I had my episode, I had to go back home to Las Vegas and take care of my family, you know. And when I had returned back to Philly after I think like maybe 3 or 4 months, back to like living alone by myself, you know, it was a hard transition. And I remember seeing a live stream or a video or something of her just like crying and detailing her struggles with bipolar disorder. And it was really sad for me to see, especially after a fresh diagnosis. And it was really triggering in a way, but it also, I think, made me feel more appreciative of like what I did have, you know what I mean? Even though the transition was like hard for me at that time, I'm like, well, you know, I don't feel this bad. And I guess there's still a bit more hope for me, but then also obviously feeling bad for her. And it's just like, this is, you know, this is an icon and this is a legend. And it's kind of just like scary and sad to know that, like, you know, when it comes to mental illness, it doesn't discriminate. It's hard for all of us, no matter what. It's one of those things that makes me want to continue my path, my healthy path, because it's really triggering and it's really sad and it's really hard constantly hearing tragic stories about people bipolar. And I think one of the main things that keeps me going and keeps me putting my health as number one is that I don't want to end up a tragedy, because I want to be able to kind of like be someone to other bipolar people of someone who didn't become a tragedy and was able to manage, and that it is possible. And it's not kind of like either this death sentence or this like life of constant struggle. It's not easy. But when I think of my life as a whole, I don't think of it as a tragedy.
As Shamir reflected on their own mental health journey, they said those ups and downs and different mental states have shown through their music, which has changed dramatically from album to album.
I look at each of my albums as a scrapbook, and I think that's why they're so different, because I think each sound kind of really represents the kind of like mind state that I was probably in during those years as well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was actually just thinking about that before you said that. That's amazing. And how would you describe like your mind state for this record?
Anxiety. I mean, that's the title states. Anxiety, but also peace with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, which I think, again, goes with kind of like mental illness not being easy, but or managing mental illness not being easy, but it being worth it. And I think that really describes Homo Anxietatum in correlation with this sound sonically, right? Like, it means anxiety, it means anxious man, but it sounds really breezy and easy.
It does,
and has this kind of like very colorful sound to it. And I think it's me making peace with that anxiety, you know what I mean? Like, just because I might suffer from anxiety doesn't mean that I'm in a constant state of agony. I can find my own happiness within that anxiety.
That was Shamir. Their latest album, Homo Anxietatum, was released Friday. Here's a song, Oversized Sweater, off that record. Shamir says the song's title is based off a real oversized sweater that they knit themselves. Knitting is one of their de-stressing activities, and the oversized sweater acts as a kind of security blanket that helps them manage anxiety. This is Sound and Vision.
Last a month or last a lifetime. You never know how long you'll stay too.
with Sound and Vision. Before you go, please take 2 minutes of your time and do something that would mean a lot to me. Subscribe to this podcast, rate it, and review it. Those little things go a long way to let other people know that this podcast is worthy of their time. And KEXP is a publicly funded station, which means the majority of our funding pays for what we do. So if you want to financially support this show, we would really appreciate it. You can give a one-time $20 donation at kexp.org/sound. Thanks so much for listening.